So this is part four, our final sermon in the series of boundary relationships, relationship boundaries. And now we're going into area five. This is immediately after part four that we just gave. Area five, principle of communicated boundaries. The principle of communicated boundaries. As we discussed, setting a boundary, whether we're talking about a functional boundary, a relational boundary, it relates to identifying where there's a line, where there's a property line. And we talked in the first sermon about how God not only set boundaries, that God communicated those boundaries and the consequences for breaking those boundaries. God created us to have relationships and to function within relationships. This whole topic of boundaries is about how do we function within relationships with others. The principle of communicated boundaries has to do with the fact that boundaries have to be visible and known to others, and therefore communicated. Boundaries have to be visible and known to others, and therefore communicated. And again, we saw God did that. He didn't expect somebody to just guess where boundaries were with him, and then they died if they crossed over some boundary. God said, no, here's the line. You wear shoes when you come past this point, you got a problem. You don't wear the appropriate clothes, you got a problem. And he laid all those out for people. But since all of us want to feel loved, we all have fears, we have guilt, we have fears of losing love, we have connections that we want to maintain. We all sometimes feel and fear that we will, if we set a boundary and we communicate that boundary, we're going to experience somebody's anger or disappointment. And we can often try to have secret boundaries. Secret boundaries. We all have boundaries whether we communicate them or not. For example, I've used this already as an example in this sermon series. You don't like to be hugged. Now, you don't have to communicate that to me, but you have that boundary whether you communicate it or not, right? And I'm coming up as a hugger, and I'm getting ready to hug you, and you either communicate that boundary to me, or I feel you kind of awkwardly pull away, as I can tell this is not in your comfort zone, right? And so you indirectly communicate it to me, and if I'm picking up on that, I may observe that you don't like to be hugged. Maybe the first time I'll just think, do I have bad breath? Second time I'm going to go, no, they don't like to be hugged. Effective communication is key. You know, trying to do it indirectly or through manipulation, hoping they get the hint, is not the best. So that's the principle of communicated boundaries. I'd like to now move through what I call area six, and it's six ideas that people can have toward boundaries. Some people call these myths. I'm calling them ideas. Six ideas that people can have toward boundaries. Idea one. Some people believe that boundaries are selfish. Boundaries are selfish. All of us as true Christians, we don't want to be selfish. We don't want to be perceived as selfish or self-centered. We understand that we've been called to model Christ in our lives and be loving to others. But some go too far and they think that boundaries turn us into self-centered, you know, selfish individuals. And that's why we had to start in Sermon 1 with establishing God sets boundaries. God is a relationship boundary setter. He sets it over people's behavior and sets consequences and then enforces those consequences when they're broken. No one would make the case that God's selfish, right? Nobody here would raise their hand to that. God's not selfish. God's not self-centered. In fact, the Bible tells us in 1 John 4, verse 8 and 16, that God is love, right? That is who he is. Yet he is a boundary setter. Within his love, he establishes boundaries over and over again and enforces those boundaries. God shows us that good boundaries allow us to exist in healthy relationships with people. Through boundaries, our relationships should actually be better, more stable, and healthier by utilizing and communicating boundaries. Boundaries should free us to love and care for others. And then also to be responsible for ourselves. Jesus Christ is recorded in Luke 5 and verse 16 that he often withdrew into the wilderness and prayed. But what's interesting is when it says he often withdrew from the crowds, it was immediately after saying that this great multitude came to hear him, to be healed by him. They had needs. They wanted him to act for them, to do things for him. And he sometimes would leave that situation where there were true needs, true wants, true desires of his time, energy, and focus, and he would go away. And he would put a boundary that right now, I'm not available. Right now, I'm going off. I have other things. I have to pray. I have to recharge maybe. Now, Christ wasn't being selfish to withdraw from this great multitude of people with their real problems. No, he had balance as well. He modeled that for us, balance. Selfishness is a fixation on our own desires, needs, and wants to the exclusion of other people and their our responsibility to those other individuals. Remember, we read the scripture in part three that we're supposed to not only look out for our own interests, but also the interests of others. Selfishness is it's all about me. I'm looking out for me. I don't really care about you. The New Testament church struggled against a teaching called asceticism. And asceticism took this idea that everything physical, everything that is about, you know, your needs, what you like to eat, you know, your desires, what's pleasurable, and it started saying, oh, that's sinful. Because really, as a Christian, you should be all about the spiritual. If it's spiritual, that's what you should be focused on. And anything you're focusing on, your needs, your wants, your desires, your likes, your preferences, that's evil because that's physical. Well, we don't want to get caught up in a similar idea that way. Because in a similar way, some will say, oh, when you're focused on your needs, you're selfish. That's a luxury. As a Christian, you're supposed to put all that aside. You're supposed to be there to love and serve others. But that's a wrong view. It's another ditch. And then the other ditch is to see one's needs is the only thing that matters. You know, my needs is what matters here. You're here to help fix my needs. God's here to help fix my needs. And that's what I'm focused on. That would be then the opposite ditch. Biblically, largely, God made us to be responsible for our own lives. Our lives are a gift from God. If we don't put boundaries in place, if we lack boundaries, we don't place a proper respect around the ownership for our lives that God has gifted us with. We're meant to take these lives and we're supposed to develop the talents. We're supposed to develop our abilities, our feelings, our thoughts, our behaviors. As we looked at in the last sermon or the part two on Matthew 24, the parable of the talents, we saw that when the servant didn't do anything with what God gave him or the master gave him, called him a wicked and lazy servant. God wants us to be growing and developing our lives, and that involves physically, emotionally, and spiritually. To believe, again, the idea that all boundaries are selfish is to believe that God himself is selfish. All right, idea two. Some believe if I set boundaries, I will be hurt by others. If I set boundaries, I will be hurt by others. Is it possible that if you set a boundary, somebody is going to get angry, maybe even, you know, verbally attack you, maybe withdraw emotionally from you because of the boundary you set? Absolutely. That can happen. Why? Because they have free will. They get to choose how they respond to your boundary. Some are going to push hard back against the boundary. They don't want to respect your boundary, and they're going to push against it. Some hearing this sermon right now are not going to like the fact I'm talking about boundaries. Some people like to control other people and walk over other people. They hate the idea of boundaries. Why? Because if somebody lives with boundaries in their lives and puts boundaries in their lives, they lose their ability to walk over and control that individual. We can't control how other people are going to respond to our no or our boundary. Some people are going to welcome it, and some people are going to hate it. And that's their choice. And we have to live with the choices that are their choices. In my last sermon, I said that if we have to say yes to someone and, or they're going to reject us, then we don't have a relationship with them, not in a real sense. In science, There's something called a litmus test. You're probably all familiar at least with the term. And science is about testing whether something's acidic or alkaline. But it's developed in our society over time to be about a test that allows whether a single point is a determining factor in something, whether a single factor is decisive about whether something or someone is one way or another. So in boundaries, a litmus test for the quality of your relationship with someone is whether someone that you set a boundary with, whether they will still respect you and still have a relationship with you, whether they still value your opinion, your thoughts, your individuality. Because people who only love us with a yes, who don't like our boundaries, only our compliance, aren't really in a true relationship with us. Setting boundaries are about being real and truthful. Real and truthful. It communicates what we like, what we don't like, who we are, and who we're not. All right, idea three. If I set boundaries, I'm going to hurt others. If I set boundaries, I'm going to hurt someone. I think all of us, we fear hurting people we love. But boundaries aren't weapons. Boundaries aren't for attacking. Their boundaries are defensive. They're walls. They're defensive by nature. They're protective. Appropriate boundaries don't attack or injure someone. By saying no to adults who are responsible for their own lives, their own backpacks, their own needs, their own emotions, their feelings, etc., they're responsible to get their own needs met. Saying no to them may cause discomfort, but it doesn't harm or injure them. Boundaries aren't just about saying no to people who are trying to manipulate us or control us. Sometimes boundaries are about saying no to somebody who has a real need. Something's legitimate. But even when somebody has a valid problem, there are times when we're not the one to help them for one reason or another. That happened to me a number of months ago. I texted a couple in the church and I said, would you mind doing this thing? They thought about it and they texted back, no, we can't help you with that. They didn't give an explanation and they didn't need to. They're servants of the church. They give all the time. They show up. They serve. So that's not in question. They sacrifice consistently for the church. But this time in their life, the answer needed to be no. And I remember when I got that no, of course I was disappointed because I was hoping they would take that off my plate, right? I was disappointed, but I remember actually sitting there and admiring the fact that they knew they could say no. That they knew they could say it and that our relationship wasn't any worse for them having said it. But they didn't know how I was going to respond. Maybe I would be really upset that they told me they can't help me that way, right? They had to go on faith that their no was the right thing to say at that moment. Because again, people are responsible for their own backpacks. Even when I had a legitimate need come up, I had to look somewhere else to get that need met. That was my responsibility, and they weren't able to fill it, so it still was my responsibility to go, okay, I still have this problem. How am I going to get it solved? I had to be creative and come up with another way, which we did. That's what we did when they said no. We looked for another creative way to get it solved. We stepped back, we evaluated our need, and we figured out another way to get it met. Now, someone might say in that moment, or in a moment like this, where you're afraid of hurting someone else for saying no, they might say, well, I feel bad because I know I'm the only person they have. Well, that's a problem. Why are you the only person they have? We all need more than one relationship in our life. We need a whole group of supportive relationships. Having more than one relationship allows others to have lives that they're living, to be out of town, to be unavailable, to whatever is going on in their life. The answer is no today. They could be going through their own crisis or boulder at the moment, and they can't help. Got to have more than one. It's a blessing. It was the church was designed as a blessing for us. We have tons of relationships around us. And you have the opportunity to develop those relationships. Now, if you haven't, If you only have one or two relationships in your life that you can turn to, whose problem is that? It's really your problem that you haven't developed those relationships. So I encourage you, if you're evaluating your life right now and you say, when I have a problem, I only have one or two people I can turn to, I encourage you to start working on some new relationships, because you need more than one or two people. You need to be able to put forth the effort to develop relationships, because again, one or two is not enough. Even God doesn't always say yes to us when we go to him for help, right? We go to God for a request and we go, God, I need you to help me. I need you to fix this problem in my life. And sometimes God says, no, I'm not doing that. You either have the capacity to work through it on your own, or, you know, there's some reason it's for your good, or whatever his reason is for no, but God says no. Now, idea four. When others set boundaries, I'm injured. I'm injured. I'm not just hurt, I'm injured. When others set boundaries, I'm injured. No one likes to say, or no one likes when someone says no to us. Having someone say no to us when we have a need, or whether real or perceived, it leaves a bad taste in our mouth. It can be hurtful. It can feel rejecting. It can be unpleasant. If we have trouble receiving someone else's boundary, it can mean that we have an overly dependent relationship with that one person if we expect that they always have to be there for us. No one relationship in your life should be totally indispensable. Such dependency is appropriate for children as they grow, because their parents are their whole world at that time. But as they grow into adults, they should have a number of and several healthy, supportive relationships. When there's one person that we can't take no from, we've effectively turned our lives over to their control. And in a bad relationship, that can allow that person to hold us hostage or have emotional control over us by threatening to leave if we don't comply to what they want. And we can be exploited because we have an overdependence on that one person. Also, an inability to take no from someone might indicate that we have a problem taking responsibility for our own backpacks, our property. If we think our financial problems are somebody else's problem to fix for us when we fall into it, or we think our different situation means they have to step in, then we're going to struggle when they say no, because our problem is still there. Some people become so accustomed to others fixing their problems that they honestly see their well-being as being someone else's problem to fix. And they feel unloved and let down when they're not bailed out of their situation. All right, idea five. Idea five. Don't I owe some people? Don't I owe some people? There are some people in our lives we can feel obligated to. Wonderful parents. They've sacrificed so much for me in my life. They've done so much. They've been loving to us. Many will feel obligated to people and will avoid in those relationships where they feel obligations, will avoid setting appropriate boundaries at times. They may feel guilty when someone's done so much for them to say no to someone who's been so kind and been there for them through their life. Someone might not even leave home. They might not change jobs when everything else tells them they should. It would be wise, it'd be mature for them to do so. The principle here is that something that is given as a gift is not debt. Something given as a gift is not debt. A gift implies that it was given without expecting something in return, other than gratitude and thankfulness. All that I've done for my kids as parents, they don't owe me anything for that other than thankfulness and gratitude, right? That's what they owe me for all we've poured into them. But, when they get on and they have lives to go on and they need to evaluate where to live and what, all those different things, they don't need to feel like guilt back to all that mom and dad poured into their life that dictates to them, not being able to do what they think they need to do. When someone's been great to us, kind to us, generous to us, we again owe them gratitude and thankfulness. And then we're, God expects that we do that to other people. We're good to other people. We show love to other people. But there's a principle found in Luke 14 and 12. Luke 14, 12. And this is about Christ giving instructions about when you invite people over. And he said, he also said to him who invited him. So, you know, Christ is using this example to someone who's invited him. He says, when you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, and your relatives, nor rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. And when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, in verse 14, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. You shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just. There's a principle here that when we give a gift, the point of giving a gift is not so the person then turns around and does something nice back for us, invites us over to their home because we invited them over to our home. We had you for night to be last year, so not, you know, we're going to invite you for night to be this year. And, you know, we just kind of keep this reciprocal gift giving back. Not everyone gives with no strings attached. We therefore have to sometimes use wisdom to determine whether a gift is given to get or whether it's a true gift. If someone is hurt and angry because we only respond with sincere gratitude and thankfulness, then it's likely that that gift was an investment. They wanted some sort of return on it in one way or another. And, you know, again, it's a loan. It wasn't a gift. If your gratitude is not enough, then you, or if your gratitude is enough, if your gratitude and thankful for what they did for you is enough, then it likely was a legitimate gift with nothing else expected in return. Idea six, and this one's short. Boundaries are permanent. Some people believe, oh, if I set a boundary, you know, what if I set the wrong boundary? But boundaries aren't permanent. So I said that in a way that makes it seem like that's what I'm saying, and I'm not. That's an idea or a myth that can be out there that boundaries are permanent. But your boundaries are your boundaries. You own them. They don't own you. If there comes a time when that boundary is no longer appropriate, it's your boundary. Change it. Pick up the fence, move it somewhere else. It's your boundary. It's in your power to move the boundary. Now, as we start to head down what I'll call the final stretch of this, how do we start to pull all this together? Area seven. Where do we place boundaries? Where are we to place boundaries? I'm going to look at three here. One, a boundary is needed in your life when someone wants you to carry their daily load, their daily backpack. This can show up, I'll say that, maybe I should say that one more time. A boundary is needed when someone wants you to carry their daily load, their daily backpack. And this can show up in all sorts of ways. This can be cleaning up for someone when they're old enough to clean up after themselves. Providing financial support for someone when they're not providing for themselves. Again, we're not talking about true boulder situations. This is something where otherwise a healthy person that's capable of being responsible is not doing what they're supposed to be doing. This is not for boulder situations. Again, you know, the church, our church members are generous. When there's a boulder situation, I remember a few years back, one of the minister's wives got sick with cancer. And their medical costs went through the roof, as you can imagine. And the church showed up overnight, thousands and thousands of dollars in an account for them to pay off medical bills. The church is full of generous people. That was a boulder situation. They didn't fail to plan. It wasn't they weren't taking their responsibility. Was it their problem? Yes. But it was a boulder that they could not carry on their own. There was no way they were going to pay off that debt on their own. And the church showed up. But what if you have a young adult who won't keep working? They keep quitting their job. They want to live on your couch. They don't want to do their, you know, take their responsibility seriously. Are you helping that young person by enabling them to continue living their life that way? And again, I'm not talking about one young adult in this room. I don't know any of our young adults doing that. camping out on the couch of their parents and not, you know, being responsible. I'm just putting that out there as a case. These situations come up when someone is not taking responsibility and they treat their daily backpack like a boulder. And we have to set boundaries there. If somebody's, you know, not being financially responsible, I'm not paying anything for you because you're not doing what the Bible says you need to be doing. I doubt I need to keep going through tons of examples here because likely if you're carrying somebody else's backpack in addition to your backpack, you probably know it. You probably feel some burden from it, and you probably feel some resentment from what you're carrying because you realize somebody else is supposed to be carrying it. If you're in this situation, again, the easiest way to handle it is stop breaking the principle of sowing and reaping. Stop interrupting the natural consequences that are supposed to come in that situation. Stop paying for things that it's their responsibility to pay. Let the natural consequences be the teaching tool that God designed. I'm not saying this is easy. In fact, this is one area that I've sometimes failed as a parent, right? Some difficult thing comes for your kids. They deserve it. They didn't do what they were supposed to do. And then you step in and bail them out of the situation and interrupt that cycle. So I've done it. It's hard. It's hard to see people you love face consequences that you can even step in and help them avoid. But then do they grow if we do that over and over for them? And it's an important growth opportunity for them. A second area where we have to set boundaries. A boundary is needed when someone is harming you, whether emotionally, physically, sexually, verbally. God did not create us to be abused by other people and not create us to be doormats for someone else. Even in the church, we put someone doing these things out of the church. A boundary. Why? To help them. To make sure it's clear this is not okay behavior. This is unacceptable. It's also to protect that individual and also to protect potentially the whole congregation. But ideally, it's to help them. To help them recognize their behavior and respond and change to grow and overcome. And then hopefully, if they prove over a long period of time a track record, fruits worthy of repentance, to reinstate them. Fruits worthy of repentance is what John the Baptist talked about in Luke 3 and verse 8. We have people in the church who are in abusive relationships. Sometimes they feel trapped. Sometimes they feel like they have no way out. Sometimes they don't see even some of the true choices they have in front of them. Individuals in these situations sometimes need to be brave and seek out godly counsel to find out, you know, help them explore what are their choices. But God does not expect a spouse or a child to stay in abuse. It's not okay. Marriage doesn't make us someone's property that they can treat us however they want. There may be times that there has to be distance in a relationship due to the inappropriate behavior. That loss of relationship is meant to bring someone back into acceptable behavior. Not from a manipulating someone standpoint, trying to get them to do what we want, but bringing their behavior back into alignment with what the Bible shows is appropriate biblical behavior. So this might involve separating from someone, taking a certain amount of time off and allowing some emotional distance to be there in order to create a safe space around us, to create time for that individual to have reflection, to take time for us to have reflection, and hopefully allow that abusive individual to change. Someone in an abusive relationship has to separate from that person until a real pattern has been established and can be demonstrated. If someone has been abusive, it would be unwise to put ourselves right back into a situation where we continue to suffer harm. So we have to wait until there's been, a pattern of fruits of repentance. The Boundaries book uses this term. Forgive, but guard. Forgive, but guard. I might say a little bit more about that area when we move on toward the very last part of the sermon. But I want to cover number three here, where a boundary is needed as well. Boundaries are needed where the situation is not good for you. A boundary is needed where the situation is not good for you. We as Christians, we sacrifice. It's in our blood. It's who we've been called to be. We do. We give energy. We serve. We show up. We give financially. We do all those things. But there's some times when we don't have it to give. We don't have the energy that day that's being asked for us. We don't have the time. We don't have the money. And we can't give what we don't have. It's like giving money you don't have to give. There are times when we also don't have energy to give or focus to give or whatever it might be due to what's going on in our lives. Now, that might make us need to ask the question, if I never have anything to give, if I never have any time to give to the church or people when they're in need, if I never have, you know, something, well, why? Why don't I ever have something to give? Do I have all the time I need for Facebook and, you know, YouTube videos, sports, but I never have time for God's people when they need my help or serving at church? Well, that would indicate a problem too, right? So sometimes we have to ask, why do I feel I have to say no all the time? If we never have anything for others, again, it could be indicative of another problem there. But sometimes and often our no is legitimate. We have, again, a lot of service-minded individuals, focused individuals in this congregation. And so sometimes when we've had something unforeseen in our week, we've had a terrible, rough week ourselves. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. And then that's when Mr. Phelps calls and says, hey, would you be able to do X, Y, or Z? And sometimes the answer is no. Someone asks, and it's just not the right thing for us to do, or maybe it's not the right thing for our family. And this is where I have to sometimes stop with or look at boundaries, because I'm someone who can tend to put a little bit more on my shoulders. It's just how I'm made up. Some of you are made up that same way. You're strong. You have energy. You sleep pretty well. You have it to give. And so you're likely to add a little bit more and a little bit more. But sometimes someone else suffers when you do that. And for example, sometimes I'm about to say yes, and I go, I better check with Cindy. I better check with the family. If I say yes to this, what's the impact on the family right now? And sometimes after checking with the family and what they're going through and what their emotional needs are and variety or everything that goes into that, I might conclude my yes here is actually going to hurt my family. Even though I could say yes and put it on the shoulders, my wife's going to suffer or my kids are going to suffer. And frankly, they're right. I haven't been around all week, and I'm just going to add one more thing. I mean, how many times have we seen that in church, right? Someone who burnt, I mean, they're service-minded people, but to the detriment of the family. And the family suffered because they were the yes man. Someone might have true legitimate needs, whether for your time, your energy, your knowledge, your money. But even sometimes in the face of legitimate needs, the answer needs to be no. Now, next time the answer might be yes. Again, I'm making the assumption today that I'm talking to everybody here in this room and everybody on Zoom that are goodwill people. People who love to serve, love to give, not people who are looking for just another excuse they can say no, right? And get out of serving and get out of loving other people so that they can, you know, cater to their self-centeredness and self-serving natures. I'm speaking to goodwill people. But healthy boundaries are about putting healthy, you know, boundaries in place. That seems like probably a terrible sentence. Healthy boundaries about putting healthy. But anyway. Now, someone warned me about giving this sermon series. They said, if you do this, you're going to have counselings coming out your nose. And in one way, I hope they're right. Because frankly, I wish I knew this 20 years ago. I wish I had studied deeply into this topic. It's not something that I think comes intuitive to us. It's a passion item of mine now, and I want to help people, and I'll set the boundaries. I'll make sure I don't overschedule my family through the process. And if the answer has to be no on a certain day, that'll be no. But the point is, I want to help. I want to be there if somebody's trying to weigh out this tricky situation, and because they tend to be tricky. If they were easy, you'd probably already have it all solved and have the right boundaries all in place. But they're tricky. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm not even going to pretend I have all the answers, even with the books we have on the subject. I'm simply going to try to come alongside you from the Bible, from what I've studied, and try to be a friend to say, here's what I think you should consider. But ultimately, choice is yours. If someone's not taking responsibility for their life, if someone in your life is an alcoholic, if someone in your life is a workaholic, if someone in your life is abusive, you have choices and boundaries that you can set. The final area I want to talk about today is breaking boundaries carries consequences. Breaking boundaries carries consequences. We talked in the first sermon in this series about how when man broke one of God's boundaries, God carried out the consequences for that. Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, and other consequences were put in place because they broke his boundary. Just like in our world, trespassing on someone's land carries consequences. God set consequences for breaking boundaries, and so should we. And then failing to have consequences and enforcing them when a boundary is broken means no real boundary exists. Boundaries are not empty threats. They must be followed through on, otherwise it's not a boundary. If all you do is threaten, if you do this, but then they break that boundary and nothing happens, why would they respect your boundary next time? The impact on alcoholism in a family is very serious and damaging. A boundary might be, the next time you come home drunk and are drunk around us and the kids, I'm going to leave and I'm going to take the kids with me. That's a stated consequence to bad, harmful behavior. Enforcement of that boundary is leaving the next time that person stumbles in drunk, mad, and you take the kids with you and you go somewhere else and create that space that hopefully is a teaching tool. Now, you can't control someone else, but you can set limits for what you're willing to put up with. You aren't making that individual stop drinking. That's their choice. You can't do that. But you're taking responsibility for you and your property and the children that are your responsibility to keep in a safe environment. And you're giving them the same opportunity. You have the choice. You have your responsibilities to take ownership over. Their failure to take responsibility for themselves requires the enforcement of the consequence. The boundary book refers to consequences as the barbs on the fence. The barb on the fence says, I'm serious about enforcing this boundary. All of us come up to a fence and it's an easy fence. You can hop over that fence. Other times we come up to a fence and it's got the razor wire on top and you go, there's no way I'm climbing over that fence, right? That it's meant to say, I'm serious about keeping you out of this area. You might not want to respect the boundary, but the consequences will likely help you to respect them. If you don't have a job and you don't have money to pay your bills, you won't have gas money, and I'm not giving you any of that money. I'm putting a boundary there, and next time their car can't go somewhere, it sits. Now, that might seem harsh, but what's going to teach them? You putting money in the tank or their car not being able to go anywhere? Thought about sharing a personal example, but I won't. Maybe that would be over the line for one of my children, so I won't share that. Jose said betrayed. That, yeah, they might feel that way. Not giving person money enforces the boundary. By not giving them the money, it enforces the boundary, allowing them to pay the consequence for not being able to use the car. Now, you might say, if you do drugs, you are not living in this house one more day. You're out. That's the boundary you might have to set. If you don't pay your rent, I'm evicting you. You're out. You can't curse at your mother and I. If you do it again, I'm deactivating your cell phone for a month. You do it again, I'm deactivating it for 2 months. Setting some sort of boundary says there are lines you can't cross. It's your choice. But if you do, you know, we're not putting up with it. Allowing someone the freedom to make bad choices and then allowing them to feel the consequences of those choices is very hard. And as I said, my wife laughed at me last night because she was listening to part two again. And she says, those who can't do, teach. And she's right. And because she it was talking about a certain section where I you know, was teaching a principle that I failed in myself in my own life. So don't think that I'm trying to act like I'm perfect at these things. I'm not. And forcing a consequence on someone you love is hard, but it's still the right thing to do. If we want them to have the opportunity to have the best life and to have, you know, happiness and grow and develop, it's the right thing to do. We often need to get counseling to be able to do it. Sometimes we're not strong enough on our own. That's why they make all sorts of support groups, right? People that can come alongside us and say, yeah, no, that boundary's right, and you're doing the right thing here, and we support you. I'm going to bring this to a close, and I'm doing it with an overwhelming sense that I'm still leaving so much unsaid. There's so much that could be talked about here. If this is something that's resonating in your life, I highly encourage you to continue to study into it. I've talked about this one, which I believe everybody should read. It's, you know, Boundaries by Cloud and Townsend. If you have a certain area in your life, they've got boundaries with teens, boundaries in dating, boundaries with kids, boundaries in marriage, that bring all these principles to that one type of relationship and says, well, what's that look like here where I might be struggling? So I hope people will continue to study this, but I hope that even what we've covered today is helpful. I hope it's laid some level of foundation to help you to have healthy boundaries in your life, and then also to respect the boundaries that other people put, even when they sometimes hurt. Throughout this series, we have seen that God is a relationship boundary setter, that he sets boundaries on other people's behavior. He communicates the clear consequences for breaking his boundaries and following through on those consequences. We've seen that God allows each person to be responsible for their own individual choices, that God doesn't control anyone. We can't control anyone. We must own our own individual responsibilities for our lives. We saw how we're supposed to be responsible for what's considered kind of your daily stuff, your daily backpack, what the Bible shows we're supposed to be responsible for. But then that we're supposed to be also able to help out people when something unforeseen happens in their life that is not just typical daily stuff. We looked at principles where God established and enforces principles of sowing and reaping and principles of action. In today's final two parts, in 3 and 4, we saw how our boundaries are impacted based on, you know, our upbringing, ways that people interacted with us. We looked at boundary injuries that can incur in our life from people who maybe withdrew and pulled back emotional love when we needed it. We saw impacts and injuries that can happen when somebody's hostile to us when we set a boundary. We also saw impact from over control and under control. We looked at 4 boundary problems that commonly occur, such as saying yes to the bad, saying no to the good, being controllers, and being non-responsive. In this final part 4, we saw how boundaries can't be a secret. They have to be clearly defined and clearly communicated. We saw that boundaries of and by themselves aren't selfish, that people can be hurt by boundaries, but that boundaries themselves aren't wrong, that others might not like our boundaries, and we might not like the boundaries of someone else. We also looked at our own boundaries, or that we own our own boundaries, and we can change them anytime we want. We saw that we need boundaries in 3 places in our lives. When people want us to carry their backpacks, their daily responsibilities, when someone's behavior is harmful and injures us or our family, and when we don't have it to give at that moment from a sincere, loving heart. And lastly, we looked at the critical need of enforcing boundaries with consequences so that the individual respects the boundary and has the opportunity to grow and develop as God designed. John 10 and verse 10, Christ said these words. He said, "The thief does not come except to steal, kill, and to destroy." Think about all the harm done, destruction, theft of joy, the loss of peace from boundaries being trampled or boundaries not being set. God's way is meant to lead to a life of joy and peace. Christ said, I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. May God bless your lives with greater fullness, greater joy, healthier relationships, and greater peace through biblical relationship boundaries.